The Clone Wars have ended.
Go, 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 go!
We went over the plan 5 times.
I got the package, didn't I?
We need a pickup.
Hang on.
Fanboys and Friends presents Back to the Clones. Clones versus Creepy. Empire Dawns.
This is the top team. The rogue clones on the run from the Empire, huh?
Hello.
How juicy.
The Empire's growing stronger. We should be doing more.
You want to really be free? Then pull off this heist, and you can have a future.
Rumors are more and more clones have been questioning the Order.
Then they are traitors, like the Jedi.
You all gave up everything because of me.
We made the right choice, Omega. But there are others out there who need our help.
What sort of treachery is this?
Stay back!
Join your hosts, David Sinden and Kyle Wagner. A new episode of Back to the Clones, Clones vs. Trooper, Empire Dawns, starts right now.
We're soldiers. We do what needs to be done.
Move! You know what makes us different? We make our own choices.
What do you need, Rex?
Any chance I could use you for a mission?
All right, gang, and welcome to the latest episode of Back to the Clones, Clones versus Trooper, Empire Dawns. Yeah, we kept the last name as last season, or we kept the name from last season for this season, because it was pretty much the same thing. I am your host, David Sinden, and we're a little behind, but here we are with you. Talking Bad Batch, talking the first 4 episodes. And so with me, your friend of mine, all the way out in Dagobah, or, you know, Florida to be more accurate. But if you're confused, why are you here? Your friend of mine, Kyle Wagner. Kyle, how's it going, buddy?
I honestly don't have no idea why I'm here, but that's par for the course this time of year. But I am excited. We are talking season 3 of the Bad Batch, the first 4 episodes. I know when we look back at season 2, we definitely have some ups and downs, but I thought season 2 ended on a fairly strong note. And I thought season 2 had, when it was hot, when it hit its highs, it was very well done. When it hit its lows, it was a little rough. But I got to tell you, David, without going into super spoilers, I'm liking how we're starting out of the gates on season 3.
I do. I will agree with the when you hit high, it hit a high, and when it hit low, it hit low. When it hit high, it felt like one of those comedy sketches where you hear Benny Hill music and Dave just pokes his head into the office. Right?
Okay.
And when it hit low, yeah, Dave was nowhere to be found.
And I think it actually works out that we're doing the first 4 in a grouping, because it really felt like that this first 4 really were kind of like their own quarter story for this season.
It did, yeah.
So I'm anxious to talk about it, because I'm curious on your takes. We are covering season 1, episode 1, Confined, season 2, Paths Unknown, Shadows of Tantus, episode 3, and episode 4, A Different Approach. And David, I'm gonna say right now, one of the things that I really liked about these first 4 episodes, and I know we'll talk about each one a little bit more individually, but It's something that I think the Bad Batch had a little bit of a problem with last year, that so far to this start, they're keeping it streamlined and on course. They're not deviating for all these side stories.
Right. And they're only doing 15 this season, correct?
Correct. But I just feel like that even I know we've had a couple more episodes come out since these first 4, but it really truly does feel like they've decided on their path, and that's the path they're taking through the season.
Yeah, no, I agree. very rare, because I believe we had not only that the opposite of that conversation, the opposite of that feeling with season two, but also with season one. And Kyle, I got to admit something right out of the gate. For me, this is one of those shows that really, really isn't, you know, something about it just isn't working the way I would have wanted it to. But I will tell you where, for me, the Bad Batch has worked. Right?
Okay.
If you go back to the Clone Wars arc introduction, where they were saving Echo, I believe that was in season 7, or was that?
Yeah, that was the final season.
It worked for me there. And I kind of feel that, you know, as effective as they were in an arc, right? Like a single isolated arc, I haven't really, you know, had that feeling replicate or clone going from season one to now. That I just haven't had that feeling about this show.
So here's my thing with the show, and I'm of a little bit mixed bag. It's been up and down, but one of the things that I like about the Bad Batch that I think it's done maybe even a better job than in character development than Clone Wars. While Clone Wars, yes, Ahsoka is one of the all-time greatest character growth of all time, and what it did for Anakin Skywalker was great. But I think what I've liked about what I've has kept me with the Bad Batch is the fact that all the members of the Bad Batch have grown in different ways. And
I agree.
And they've developed into more of their own characters, whether it's and how they're dealing with their situation. And even Omega, who I got to be honest with you, not a fan of in season one. Improved greatly from where we started with her.
I was worried when we started with Omega that I'm like, oh God, or you know, because when we first saw her, right? I really got shades of Anakin in episode one. Are you an angel? No, don't do that to me again, right? And so I really got shades of that with how they introduced Omega. But that was back in season one. You look at Omega now and you're like, okay, where was this Omega in the first introduction?
Well, I think it's a matter, again, of character growth. And I think that's one of the important things you have to remember.
Yeah, no, I can see that, but it would have been a lot sharper here had you started with the Omega now being the first introduction we had. Had it started there and gone all the way to here, it would have been a lot sharper and more consistent as you go from season one to this.
Yeah, but I think the part of, especially with Omega, the character herself, and I mean, it's a similar path to Ahsoka. I don't think it's quite on the popularity level, but you're seeing a character grow from very naive to learning to understand the world that they're in. And what I think has been so interesting in this season, you still have that Omega who has that hopefulness and belief in things, but she's also understanding of the situations around her. And I got to be honest with you, one of the highlights for me so far this season has been the relationship between Omega and Crosshairs.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I think that has been such an interesting development because of the place Crosshair is in, and with Omega and her hopefulness kind of trying to bring Crosshair out of his problems. And just the bond that they're putting between these two characters who are so different.
As I call Crosshair, the James Woods of clones.
Yeah. But no, I think they're doing a lot of interesting things, and it's been impressive. This season it feels like there has definitely been a step up, and I think with episode one, which is Confined. And David, I got a little bit of a synopsis here for episode one, if you would bear with me.
Go ahead.
So episode one, Confined, directed by Saul Ruiz, written by Jennifer Corbett. Following her capture, Omega becomes part of the Imperial Cloning Division against her will. One of her tasks consists of taking blood samples of clones alongside Emery Carr. However, Omega becomes suspicious when Emery also takes Omega's blood, not only for Nala Say to discard the sample in secret. She also evades the guards to speak with fellow Bad Batch member Crosshair, who vainly attempts to discourage Omega from escaping Mount Tantus and befriends a lucre hound named Batcher. When the Imperials decide to euthanize Batcher, Omega frees the hound, which escapes into the jungles of Wayland. Dr. Hemlock warns Omega that further defiance will result in consequences for Crosshair. The thing I liked about this episode,
yeah,
David, was the fact that they decided to start with Omega out of the gate instead of giving us Hunter and Wrecker and what they were doing. I think starting with Omega out of the gate really makes the weight of the situation that we ended in last season in that much more powerful.
Yeah, something that was missing in season two and most certainly season one.
And what I think, especially in this episode and in over this first three episode arc, is you see Omega truly start to grow up a little bit here. She's still very much in ways is very much a child. She still has that. She's made up a replica of her stuffed animal. She still has that hope of her connection with Batcher.
Yeah.
And then trying to saving Batcher when he's going to be euthanized because of the bond Omega created with him.
Mm-hmm.
But see, it's again, what I look at is what's been the high point of this season so far is they are just nailing the character aspect of this season so far.
Oh, no, I agree. And, you know, we'll talk about it more when we talk about the next episode, but something I got to point out right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the blood samples and what they're doing and all this M count talk. By the way, you know what, guys? Stop being chicken. Just say midichlorians. Just do it. I mean, look, what's the worst that can happen? Everybody hates you again? Oh, wait. But, you know, saying midichlorians is not exactly like Sheev, where I'm like, Sheev still feels like that nice warm fart before George left the building.
No, okay. M count's a lot easier and quicker to say in the recording booth too. So,
I know, but I just
think of the voice actors, David. Think of the voice actors.
Really, I will not, because half of this budget is saved when your voice actor for all the clones is one freaking guy.
Yeah, well, like I said, let's make it as easy for him as possible.
Okay, all right. Well, fine.
It's also interesting to see how much Crosshair has actually given up.
Yeah, true. But continuing on my point, though, mm-hmm. right, is that, you know what, guys? You may not like it, but guess where all of this is going? That's right. Right to the sequels.
Well, yeah, but you know, but again, they're tying it together, and I don't fault them for that.
No, I don't either. But you know as well as I do exactly where, especially with these first two episodes, it's very clear.
Oh, yeah,
where all this is going.
They're making it very much into tying into the aspect of cloning for Palpatine, and the just how long that thing that has been going on.
And can I further elaborate something?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's very, very clear here in just two episodes, which is far more than I've gotten from the little flirting Mandalorian's been doing with the idea.
Well, I think too, when you're dealing with the aspect of you're telling kind of the what a lot of people are considering the final story of the clones, as far as
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the season of Bad Batch, we're going to understand where the clones' place fully is after
right. the events. Oh, by the end of Bad Batch, it's entirely gone, right?
So
and I, Kyle, I challenge them. I challenge Lucasfilm to by the end of this show, and whatever you walk into next with animation, get away from this era you've been in.
Well, I think that's the plan. I honestly do believe that's the plan.
Just leave it. Leave it behind. You know, do either something between 6 and 7, which I would have preferred years ago, or go do something with the High Republic.
I just want more visions. That's all I want.
Or that. Or get my boy his visions, for Pete's sake. Come on.
So, I think the other thing that's interesting in this episode is obviously we still see the impact Omega has on people. I mean, Nala Se is incredibly protective of her, not wanting, and probably also not wanting the Empire to get the technology to clone Palpatine, but also just in Omega bonding with Batcher and the effects that has, and how she is the only thing really keeping Crosshair from completely just giving into hopelessness.
Yeah.
And I think for being an Omega-centric episode, which if you would have asked me 2 years ago, would I have been excited for that? I would have been like, yeah, but this episode really did a really good job of handling it and really across the board showing the growth of this character and the importance of this character.
Oh, I agree. If you were to say we're going to center on Omega, based on just having the first two seasons as reference, I would have been like, for why? You know? And that's pretty much what you were just saying, right?
Yeah. One other thing before we move on to the next episode, because these all kind of tie in together, but
sure.
I gotta say this. Dr. Hemlock is coming across as one of the most evil bastards in Star Wars history.
You know, it's funny you bring up Hemlock, because Hemlock is making me look back at Tarkin and wonder if the late great Peter Cushing actually had more of a slime ball in him.
Here's the thing with Hemlock.
Like a slime ball that meets the level of Hemlock. Well, right?
Here's my thing with Hemlock. Honestly, I don't think I can say about too many other Star Wars villains.
Yeah.
He has that make your skin crawl aspect to him.
Yeah, well, I would agree, and it's a goddamn cartoon.
Yeah. I mean, but I can't think of another Star Trek villain that's like
Star Wars.
And when I say make your skin crawl, I'm not talking even like
Star Wars villain, dude.
Yeah, Star Wars, sorry. It's late. I'm in season. Give me a break.
Yeah, you're in tech season. We know.
Wars villain, even like with Jabba, with his physical disgustingness and things like that.
Right.
You just get that feeling from Hemlock more than I think even any other Star Wars villain I can think of, that he's going to do whatever he needs to do to achieve his goal.
Yeah. No, there is
no line of honor or mortality, even with Tarkin and Thrawn. You know, they have, there's a set of standards they have. I don't necessarily get that from Hemlock.
I'm sorry, Thrawn, especially in the series, not so much the book, right? Mm-hmm. Not book Thrawn, but more Ahsoka Thrawn. Thrawn would take one look at Hemlock and be like, dude, too much.
Yeah. But I'm saying
Ahsoka Thrawn. Now, if you had Book Thrawn and Hemlock, it would kind of be on an even scale, right?
Yeah. But I mean, obviously I would give Thrawn the advantage for the tactical mind, but
right,
Hemlock just has that line of deviancy in him. And almost,
but that's
almost
why, that's across, why, that's why I compare Hemlock to Book Thrawn versus the Ahsoka series throng.
There's almost a seed of sociopath in Hemlock.
Oh yeah, definitely. I can definitely see that.
So I just needed to get that out before we moved on to our next episode.
No, I agree.
Which is episode 2, Path Unknown, which was directed by Nate Villanueva and Path Unknown, directed by Nate Villanueva and written by Matt Michinonovich. Excuse me if I've got that butchered. I apologize. He's in
season, guys. Forgive him.
After gaining intel from the Duran crime family, Hunter and Riker travel to an abandoned Imperial cloning facility Hemlock was in charge of. The pair run into Mox, Zeke, and Stack, clone cadets that were held prisoner by Hemlock before managing to escape as the Empire destroyed the facility. Zeke helps Hunter and Riker enter the facility while evading Slithervines, an Imperial experiment gone awry. Meanwhile, Mox and Stack manage to find the Marauder while Zeke is gathering intel. The trio are attacked by the Slithervines, which are revealed to be the tentacles of a huge monster. Mox and Stack are able to extract the three before defeating the creature with explosives. Hunter then promises to take the cadets to Pabu. Now,
I'm sorry, isn't it Duros?
Isn't it what?
Isn't it Duros?
Yeah, you might be right.
Yeah.
So, I like the fact that we get the deviation and we see what Hunter and Wrecker have been up to now. With their search for Omega. And I really like the aspect of this episode because we're seeing the effects of what Hemlock is doing and how it's affecting the clones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With these three young clones that have basically been left to their own devices and who have no direction, really.
It's wearing them thin, basically.
And to see this, then to have them be influenced by Hunter and Wrecker.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I think is as interesting as well as because I think one of the things that maybe they haven't played up enough yet, but I think it's coming.
Wait, we haven't. What do you mean played up with Hunter and Wrecker? We don't even have those two together until like two episodes later.
Hunter and Wrecker, they're together in this episode.
Oh yeah, they're together, but not with the other ones.
No. Let me finish my thought process. So as far as Hunter and Wrecker, and just the rest, the Bad Batches in entirety, is one of the things I don't think they've played. That I think they're going to play up on more later in this season.
Yeah.
Is what the Bad Batch have accomplished, and what it means to the clones.
Oh, I get what you're saying.
And the influence, whether they realize it or not, and the impact they've had on probably with the tales of the Bad Batch and what they've done that are affecting the thought process of the remaining clones.
Right.
And you see that here with how they influence these three young clones who I think we'll see back before the season is over.
The Lost Boys.
Yeah, the kind of the Lost Boys. I think we see them back before the season's over.
I certainly hope not. I gotta tell you, I don't mind. Look, this episode in particular felt like a creature feature. Let me finish now. You know how Clone Wars had a lot of fill-in creature features?
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, when you and I were covering Clone Wars in our brave chronological order dump, they almost had too many of them. This felt like... Okay, if the first episode, you saw the main trajectory and they're just going right for it, you were saying, this felt like you started to slowly deviate from that line. It's like, no, guys, you only have 15 for your final season. What are we doing? This felt like that side mission.
See, I'm gonna disagree with you just a little bit, and let me explain to you where my thinking is coming from this episode.
Sure.
I think this episode has an importance to see just how bad Hemlock is treating what Hemlock is doing, because these vines, this creature, are all part of experiments he was conducting, and to leave these young clones in this situation, and just we're seeing just how little he thinks of the clones. And I think what that's it's setting up the idea in your head that, okay, Hemlock's going to be the reason why the clones completely revolt.
Right. Yeah.
And I think, while I can definitely get your creature feature kind of episode aspect going on here, I think because there's enough undercurrent here, and they're trying to tell the story of Hunter and Wrecker trying to find Omega. And this is, and so because it's only the second episode of the season, I think it actually serves a good purpose. And if you're going to have this kind of episode, to have it here when it's at the beginning of things instead of in the middle of things.
Right.
And I think, like I said, I think the importance of what this could be setting up for future episodes of the Bad Batch, and not so much with the creature itself, but things that happen and things that the Bad Batch are looking like they might be starting to represent, whether they intentionally mean to or not, to the clones.
Right, I got you, Jermaine.
It's going to be very important. So I think this is one of those episodes where, depending on which directions the season takes, you could go back and say, okay, there wasn't much to it, or you could say, wow, there was a lot more to that episode than when we first realized.
Oh. All right, that makes sense. It almost just felt like it was veering off a bit from its trajectory, because the first episode, and it's exactly what I titled this episode, this whole thing feels like a massive 360 tonal shift from where we've been, right?
This
just feels like deviating from that.
Well, but I think they needed to, because I think you need to have an episode like this to establish the path Hunter and Wrecker are taking.
You're just talking from a narrative sense?
Well, from a narrative sense, yes. Now, it's a little frustrating because we leave on such a cliffhanger in episode one, and then we've got this. But I think this is also one of the reasons why these first three episodes were all put out on the same day too.
Oh yeah, I that's another good thing to touch on. I think these three episodes were put out on the same day to avoid the churning aspect, people jumping on the watch and then leaving, then jumping back on and leaving, or whatever streamers worry about, right? Yeah. Or at least that's my thought anyway.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Cause isn't churn a real thing?
Pretty much.
For the most part. I mean, I never understood it. I'm just like, guys, you sign up for this, you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So, but that's a whole other conversation.
I for the most part, this episode, there's not a lot to dive into too deep with this episode.
No, there isn't.
I will say, I actually thought this was one of the better animated episodes of The Bad Batch.
Too. It's kind of a point A to point B sort of thing.
Yeah, right? It's like you have Omega story here, Hunter and Wrecker story here, and then in the next episode, next two episodes are going to start to come together.
Yeah. Now, did you notice? And it was a pretty big, score for voiceover talent. But the Queen, Duran Duros, whatever I think it was, was voiced by our original Morticia.
Yes, I did see that.
And I mean original Morticia, not whatever Catherine Zeta-Jones has been doing. Who's been a great Morticia, I might add, but still.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But that's gonna lead us into episode three, Shadows of Tantis.
And like I was saying with episode one, right? Uh-huh. if there was anything that spells sequel road.
Oh, yeah. What they're doing right now.
It's this. We'll get into it, but it's definitely this.
Yeah. Directed by Stuart Lee, written by Matt Minkiewicz again. Emperor Palpatine travels to Mount Tantus to learn about the progress of Project Necromancer. After Emery takes a sample of Omega's blood, Nala Se warns Omega that she is in danger and urges her to escape using a data pad with access to the facility and shuttles. Mm-hmm. Omega frees Crosshairs, and upon learning that all the shuttles are grounded because of Palpatine's visit, they escape through the Lucra Kennel chutes to find a crashed shuttle. Emery attempts to stop them, but is stunned by Crosshairs, inadvertently triggering an alarm. After neutralizing a search team, Crosshairs and Omega, joined by Badger, steal the shuttle that end up being pursued. However, after learning from Emery that the M count required for Project Necromancer can be replicated with Omega's blood, Hemlock calls off the pursuit since they need Omega alive.
Yeah.
So this really sets up, I think, what the main theme of this season is going to be is it's Hemlock's hunt for Omega, the pressure of the Empire, especially with the Emperor with Project Necromancer. And this was a very good, again, a great episode. I love the Crosshairs Omega dynamics that they're playing up right now. And just there is a sense of legitimate danger for Omega now.
Yeah, there is. She's essentially I'm just gonna say it. All right. Omega is essentially what I think this Grogu will be, especially in that Mandalorian and Grogu movie, now that we pivoted, into a movie rather than a season, so it seems. But Omega has become the MacGuffin for the remaining,
we have
10 episodes at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now here's a question, though. Do you think Omega is, and I really think, look, this kind of, we're kind of seeing with Grogu a similar thing, right? I really think there are bad ends for that kid, similar to this one. But my point is, do you think Omega is the first sort of step in this?
I think Omega is really becoming the first big step for Emperor cloning.
And Grogu just happens to be the next step as far as...
Yeah, I think Grogu is the evolution of the process.
Yes, exactly. The word I was trying to find. Grogu is the evolution of that process.
So, what I look at with this episode is just I give them all the credit in the world because it's honestly the first time since, and it kind of started maybe with the finale of last season.
Yeah,
where there is a legitimate sense of peril and risk involved with what's going on. That the stakes have truly been raised.
Yeah. Once they brought in Mount Tantus and that whole planet where basically Joris Sebaoth is hanging out in the books in Legends, right? Because I believe that's where he's hanging out. Just casually with some Isalamiri wrapped around him, right?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I read those books, but I think that's where it's hiding. But you really got a sense of, let's just say, when they brought Mount Tantus into it, that's when I started to lean forward in my chair and be like, ooh. And then season two ends, I'm like, oh, but you can't. And there, you bastards.
I think the other thing too here, and which really has got my wheels turning here, is now Hemlock truly understands the importance of Omega, and it's get Omega at all costs.
Yeah. Hence why she's the MacGuffin of the
season. Hemlock at all costs is, I think, a totally different level than a lot of other things.
Oh, dude, like we were talking about before, if Hemlock is a sleazy son of a bitch, then get her at all costs, Hemlock, is going to be just off the chains nuts.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how far Hemlock's going to go. And I think this is why the season is working so well, because they're building.
Mm-hmm.
And they're building intelligently, and they're building on a path, and they're not just a block here or a block there. It feels like they really have a plan for what they want to do.
Right. Oh, by the way, when Palpatine does arrive, right, mm-hmm. and yet it is Ian. You know, somehow Ian returns. It's like nice that guy of that high stage caliber can just pop into a sound booth. But, and they go into that room, right?
Yeah.
And when, of course, Hemlock mentions Project Necromancer, which obviously Paleon is talking about at the Shadow Council meeting, but I think it was season 3 of Mando. Yeah,
season 3 of Mando.
Yeah. Did you think at all, right? And maybe you didn't, and that's fine. But did you think at all that what Palpatine is looking at and he's shown was Dathan?
It didn't really cross my mind at the time.
Well, it did mine. I mean, if you read the Shadow of the Sith book, right?
But I think too, the big thing out of all this is that they are really, they're doing in a roundabout way, and I'm not saying they're doing it nearly as effective, David,
mm-hmm.
but they are trying to do what Clone Wars did for the prequels. They're trying to use this animated show to give it a little bit more foundation.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm just going to say, whatever the movies end up looking like, is it too much to ask? And maybe it is, because, you know, you and I both know how fickle Star Wars fans are and how, fragile they made this fandom at all. But is it too much to ask that whatever movies we get, you stop that?
Well, I think, unfortunately, and I, as much as I love the Clone Wars and I love what it did for this prequel trilogies,
mm-hmm.
it kind of created a sense of, oh, hey, we can do this and get away with it.
Yeah, you're right. It did. I'll give Bad Batch this credit, though. All right.
Mm-hmm.
It's at least been. And we'll see how the rest of this plays out, in our later discussions. But it's at least been a series with consequences and a series in order. Two yeah. words that you cannot associate at all with the run of the Clone Wars.
Oh yeah, and there are.
And I think you and I can both agree on that.
Yeah, we can both agree on that. I think there's other things with the Clone Wars order that were things beyond their control, networks. But that's a whole different.
Oh, you mean Cartoon Network and all their weird machinations at the time?
Yeah,
you're probably right.
But still. But I want,
I mean, hey, at least they didn't have as much of a hard time in that category as Buffy did. Okay.
But I want to talk about episode 4.
Where they actually switched networks.
I can't forget about that. But
yeah, that didn't go too well.
I want to get into episode 4, a different approach, which was directed by Saul Ruiz and written by Ezra Nachman. Because right. I'm going to say this, David. Of these first 4 episodes, this might have been my favorite episode.
Well, it was certainly room to breathe. Is that what you mean?
Well, let's get into it. With the damage their shuttle sustained in their escape, Omega and Crosshairs are forced to crash land on the planet Lao. They make their way to a nearby spaceport where Crosshairs wants to use force to hijack a ship, while Omega insists on acquiring the money they need to bribe a clerk through her gambling skills. When Batcher is snatched by Imperial troops, Omega goes after her, with a reluctant Crosshairs following. Imperial troops find and corner them. Crosshair suggests they use his skills to resolve the situation. Omega agrees, and they manage to free Batcher, steal a freighter, and escape the planet. Later, they rendezvous with Hunter and Wrecker, leading to a joyous and, in Crosshair's case, tense reunion. Now, the reason why I love this episode is because it's the thing I've been talking about as this whole record, David. The dynamic between Crosshairs and Omega, I'm loving it more and more. And I loved how those two played off of each other in this episode.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, ironically, I think the dynamic between, Crosshair and Omega has played out better in this short amount of time than anything did between Crosshair and anybody else.
No, I agree. I think last season,
is kind of weird because it's a show that was that's supposed to be about all four of them.
Yeah, but let's talk about that for a minute with Crosshair, because I think you and I can both agree at least two of the best Bad Batch episodes last season were the Crosshair centric episodes.
They were, yeah.
And I think what they've done with Crosshair is so impressive. Instead of just making him the traitor member of the group, the story arc that he has been on, from being screwed up by the chip to betraying the Bad Batch to now working with trying to have a redemption arc.
Right.
And that redemption coming through the hope that Omega has given him and the trust that Omega has kept in him this entire time.
Yeah.
Has been very well done. It could have been very tropey or very corny, but I think it's a lot more complex than it had any right to end up being. And I think it's been so well written. And
oh, like I agree. Said, it could have been, tropey up the wazoo, and we would have been eye rolling, not to the extent of an eye roll, like a line like somehow Palpatine Returns deserved, but we would have been eye rolling either way.
But I think this also sets up for is I think this is going to set up for something really tragic happening later on in the season.
Oh, you mean the Crosshair?
Yeah, I think I don't know if he makes it through the season, but
I'm just going to say this, and you were talking about earlier in one of our breakdowns, a war coming, right? Yeah. I'm just going to say, and look, we know we had this series that probably lasted a little longer than it should have, probably was didn't benefit really well from being out of order. And there were a few other problems there, but I'm just going to say it, Kyle. I think come the end of this series, come the end of Bad Batch season 3, there's going to be more of a legitimate clone war, a clone on clone war, than there was where in anything the Clone Wars was doing.
Yeah. Well, I think the other
thing... I mean, is that fair?
I think that's fair, but I think eventually you'll see it turn around where the clones unite, but it's still not going to end that well for them.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to end well for them anyway.
Yeah. But,
you know,
again, what's worked for me with every episode of The Bad Batch, even the ones we're not going to be talking about tonight that have come out, we will get to those, but they're just nailing these characters. It finally feels like they have a grasp on all their characters now. And this,
yeah, kind of a little late for that, but
that's what it feels like. It's like, okay,
I agree. And let me elaborate a bit. Okay. Mm-hmm. It feels like that. When your writing is really, really sharp, and when you're not just navel-gazing at the Clone Wars, which you and I have accused this show of doing throughout our discussion with season one and season two.
I think that's why season three is working so far, because yes, there's still some Clone Wars ties, but you feel it moving forward from that.
Right. No, but that's the point I was getting. Season one and season two were trapped in the fact that you were trying to be the Clone Wars. You're not. Season one was not season eight of the Clone Wars. Season two was not season nine of the Clone Wars. And the fact that, you know, and fans are mostly to blame for this. The fact that they wanted to put that in that box kind of forced the show creators, kind of forced their hand a little bit, because they were gazing too much at the Clone Wars and being like, well, what do people want?
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's an excellent point.
Yeah.
But I also, even at the end of this episode, when they finally reunite with Hunter and Wrecker, and you can feel the tension when Crosshairs comes down.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And so it makes these first four episodes, and again, they work talking about them all well together, because it does culminate with them all.
Let me point out, I love how that reunion, totally silent, right?
Yeah.
The same sort of, almost like a painting, almost. Like you had Wrecker and Hunter, you had Crosshair and Omega, kind of your, you know, Luke and Rey opposing sides, right? Facing from each other. although, you know, yeah, but I just really like that the whole less is more aspect in any Star Wars medium, right? Because it says more than, you know, dialogue does, to be honest. And what I also enjoyed, and I'm sure you noticed, is that it did not have that ridiculous, and why, JJ, you decide to do this, I'll never know. That helicopter shot when Luke and Rey were facing each other. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. They did not have that here.
Yeah. So I think overall, I am feeling very confident that I feel like Bad Batch Season 3 is off to the best start of any season of the Bad Batch.
It is, yeah.
I have one concern right now.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to voice this now, because
no, go ahead.
We saw in the trailer, obviously everybody was blown away by the return of Ventress, which I cannot wait for. I am beyond overjoyed to see Ventress return. But yeah. If you remember in the trailers too, they introduced like this dark character that, and a lot of people are speculating, well, is that Tech?
I can dispel that right now. Are you ready?
Okay.
No.
Well, okay. So let me express my fear, Mr. Senden.
Sure. Go ahead.
If it does turn out to be Tech, and I hope it isn't,
then the end of season two is negated.
Well, it's not only that. It then makes me incredibly worried that what they're going to do is give us the Ray of Sunshine ending of, oh, well, they accomplished all this and they found their way back together.
I can see that.
And I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here or something like that, but
No. It's exactly it my earlier. Concern.
Well, one of the things that has made Bad Batch good is that it's stuck with its consequences.
Yeah, it has. Which is exactly what I love about the series, and the fact that it's done a better job of that than Clone Wars ever did. And if the trooper you're talking about in question does end up to be Tech, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you are basically taking a knife to your own courage, because it takes a lot of courage to kill off a character.
Yeah, right? It does, especially one of your main characters.
Yeah, and especially one of your main ones.
And especially in an animated show.
Yeah, and if you undo that, then you literally have no consequence to your story. I would equate it, Kyle, to, you know, all the hubbub going around that's been going around, not lately, but it was, of you know, Robert Downey Jr. coming back as Iron Man. I'm like, please don't do that. Stick to your guns. Stick to what you did. Do not undo it.
So I do have one.
I know it's a live action medium, but it equates the same way.
Yeah. Right?
So, gang, thank you for joining us for, Back to the Clones versus Trooper, Empire Dawns. Sorry it took so long, but you know what? Things. We'll just leave it at that. So, again, thank you for joining us. And for me and my co-host, Kyle, we'll just leave you with this.
Ha! We're all you need.
You can buy your freedom. You can have a future. Isn't that what you're after?
We're already free.
Clearly, you're not paying attention to what's happening out there.
It is time for a new era.
Thanks for listening to Back to the Clones. Clones vs. Trooper, Empire Dawns.
There are others out there who need our help.
Covering the Star Wars Bad Batch Season 2. Streaming exclusively on Disney Plus.
We'll take all the allies we can get.
Let's go.
Let's get to work.
All things Lucasfilm Star Wars is a subsidiary of the Walt Disney Company. This podcast is meant for informational purposes only, and no infringement is intended.